안녕하세요 여러분, 김주윤입니다. 제가 와 있는 곳은 신라호텔입니다. 오늘부터 3일 동안 제3차 민주주의 정상회의가 열리고 있습니다. 민주주의 정상회의는 2021년 미국의 바이든 대통령의 주도로 이루어졌죠. 3차 회의가 여기서 열리고 있는데요. 미국이 아닌 다른 국가가 정상회의를 호스트하는 것은 이번이 처음이라고 합니다. 이런 곳에 저희 지식플레이가 빠질 수 없어서 정말 특별한 분을 인터뷰를 하려고 합니다. 미국의 국무부 장관이시죠. 안토니 블링컨 국무부 장관과의 인터뷰를 해보도록 하겠습니다. 토니 블링컨 국무부 장관은 바이든 행정부 시작부터 함께 했었고요. 그리고 그 전부터 사실은 바이든 대통령과 함께 했었던 정치적 동지다라고 할 수 있죠. 네, 정말 많은 일들이 전 세계에서 일어나고 있고 또 세계 최강대국의 국무장관으로서 이 일들을 전부 해결하고 또 보느라고 상당히 바쁘신 걸로 알고 있습니다. 사실 국무장관 하면 미국에서 의전 서열이 자, 그럼 과연 토니 블링컨 국무장관이 무슨 이야기를 우리에게 들려줄지 만나보시죠. Secretary Blinken, it's my great pleasure to meet you and thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure to meet you. Thanks for doing this.
So, how are you doing today?
Good. The better for being in Korea, the better for being at the Summit for Democracy. We have countries from all over the world here, and it's a very powerful moment to, I think, reaffirm not only the importance of democracy, but also commitment to work to strengthen it.
This Summit for Democracy was initiated and first convened by President Biden
right.
in 2021 to promote and defend the democracy around the world. Mm. However, there are a lot of concern that democracy is declining worldwide. You once said about a year ago that we've seen, quote, alarming recession of democracy, unquote. I really like the expression, had to use it. So what is your assessment of the situation and what do you think are the underlying reasons and what solutions are there?
It's a big, complicated question, but I think the bottom line is this. Yes, democracies are being challenged from both within and without, and we have seen what we would call a democratic recession, democratic backsliding. I think lots of reasons for this, and it's hard to boil it down except to say that we've seen an erosion of trust on the part of citizens in their governments. We've seen efforts to undermine the credibility of institutions. We see these challenges coming from within our societies, but we also see them, as I said, coming from without as non-democratic systems try to exploit divisions, drive wedges between people. And the truth is, democracies have to do a better job in delivering results for their people. That's the ultimate test of democracy. I think the countries that come together here at the Summit for Democracy are joined by the belief that the democracy is the best way to deliver results. But this is a time of extraordinary change. The pace of change is such that people are often confused, disoriented. People get left behind, even when there are positive trends and evolutions. If you have different segments of society that are left out or left behind, then they rightly become concerned. All of these things feed together in sometimes a crisis of confidence in our democracies. But it's exactly why it's so important to have something like the Summit for Democracy that brings us all together, that gives us an opportunity to share best practices, to understand what may be working in one place that can also work in another. And that's one of the great powers of this summit. It's also a really important time to do this. We actually have more elections around the world this year than at any time in recent memory. But we have to make sure that people are able to fully and freely participate in those elections and that the elections are protected. We also have basic rights being challenged in country after country. The more we're standing together, working together to uphold those rights, the more effective we're going to be. Any one country acting alone can do something, but there's tremendous power in acting collectively, acting together to uphold human rights, to uphold democratic rights and principles, and to look in practice how we can make democracies more effective in producing for their people.
A State Department is hosting one session titled Export Control and Human Rights Initiatives. I understand that has been a big agenda since 2021, mm-hmm. from the beginning actually. But could you please explain how the export control relate to the human rights issues?
Think about so much of the technology that dominates our lives. Technology isn't inherently good or bad. It's how you use it that really matters. And one of the things we've seen is that some of the technology that dominates our lives can also be used in bad ways to deny people rights, to repress them, to surveil them. So we want to make sure that countries, for example, that are exporting technology are clear-eyed about where it's going and how it's being used, and to make sure that it can't be used for repressive purposes. So we adopted a code of conduct, voluntary, that many countries have signed on to make sure that we have there again best practices in how we're looking at export controls on technology, and to make sure that working together, we're not inadvertently providing technology to countries or groups that might abuse it and misuse it to repress the human rights, the democratic rights of people.
Well, I understand Korea is also the participant of the Code of Conduct.
That's right.
But there are many other countries who has not participated yet. Mm-hmm. So what are you proposing to other countries have not participated yet to do?
Well, we hope more and more countries will join and sign on. But Korea is such a powerful example. I mean, one of the reasons that President Biden so appreciates Korea taking on the mantle of the Summit for Democracy is because Korea's own story is one of the most powerful democratic stories in recent memory. And that resonates. It resonates around the world. And it's a clear demonstration to people around the world, including people who may be living under autocratic or authoritarian systems, that change is possible. And it starts with people. Korea being part, for example, of this code of conduct on export controls, I think that sends a powerful message to other countries who hopefully will consider joining.
Well, maybe some other countries are being reluctant mm-hmm. to participate because maybe they're calculating the economic impacts.
Yep.
You know, maybe it goes against their national interests. Like, for example, China, notorious for having surveillance system in Xinjiang area. And also they have extensive economic engagement all over the world. So what would you say to those countries?
Look, you have to make a choice. You're right. Some countries or companies will calculate their economic interest, and they can do that. But one of the reasons why having a widely subscribed to code of conduct is so important is it means that if one country chooses to do this, but others do as well, then you don't have to worry about denying yourself a market and having someone else come in and take advantage of that. That's, again, a very good example of where there's real power in coming together and trying to act on the basis of shared principles. So the more that join in, I think it will create a positive effect of others being willing to join, because at least they won't be afraid of losing out to someone else, and they can set a clear example. The point here is really to try to create a race to the top. It's not that we want to close off markets, deny business. It's that we want to make sure, to the best of our ability, that we're doing it in a way that raises standards, that respects the rights of people, that respects the rights of workers, more broadly, that respects the environment. The more we're in this together, the more we're actually going to succeed in doing that.
It's a collective power, actually.
I think the Summit for Democracy is a very good example of that collective power.
For the summit to have a staying power, it needs member state commitment. So how would you encourage or sometimes persuade the member state to commit officially and strongly to the summit's objectives?
You know, it's been pretty remarkable. This is now the third summit, so it's a young institution. But we have more than 100 countries that have made more than 750 commitments of one kind or another to either strengthen their own democracies or to help others do the same. Changes in laws, in regulations, strengthening institutions, bringing greater transparency, combating corruption, joining together on export controls, joining together on dealing, for example, with commercial spyware. This is one of the areas that's so important, where we see this technology being abused, and now we have countries coming together to provide real accountability if it's misused. So we've actually seen the summit produce genuine commitments and countries following through on those commitments. Now, the other thing that's so important is we have other stakeholders who are here. We have civil society, NGOs, as well as the private sector. And of course, we have the media. And that's important too, because it provides accountability. When countries make commitments, when they say they're going to do something, well, people are watching, they're listening, and they'll be able to follow up to see if we actually did what we said we'd do.
And what are the expectations about Korea's role in that sense as an ally and also as a democracy?
Well, again, because of Korea's own example, it's something that both helps bring a spotlight to this initiative and helps show the way. The fact that we're here is very meaningful to us because, as you mentioned at the outset, this was one of President Biden's first initiatives. But the fact that such a strong ally and partner like Korea has taken the mantle, taken the flag, and is carrying it forward, that means a lot, because it tells us that this is something that will endure. And the more countries that take part, the more stakeholders from civil society to the private sector that get involved, the more successful we're going to be.
feel huge responsibility. By the way, last year I encountered a very interesting video clip. You were singing and playing guitar at a State Department event. And you also have some songs released on Spotify.
Now I know who the third listener is. I've been trying to figure that out. Okay.
So I listened to three songs, all three songs. And can I ask what your favorite song is?
It's asking what which is your favorite child. No, these are songs that I wrote many, many years ago, probably in university. And then I had some time after the end of the Obama administration, before the Biden administration, to record a few things with some friends.
Right.
So I always wanted to be in music as a career, but I found out at a young age that I was missing one critical thing, which was talent. But other than that, it's still a wonderful hobby. It's just nice to be able to have something that is there, and as long as the technology lasts, it'll still be there. But thanks for listening. As I said, I've been trying to figure out who the third listener is, and
I was the one. Well, it's a really last but serious question. Some people say that rock and roll is dead.
Mm.
My kids do not listen to rock music. How tragic.
All I can tell you is this. It's not scientific, but what I see among the children or teenagers that I know, children or friends, no, they still do. They listen to a lot of the classics. The Beatles are immortal. I still hear current generations listening to them. And then some of the great artists of today are actually very much grounded in rock and roll. You hear that in Taylor Swift. You hear that in Olivia Rodrigo. You hear that in so many people. So no, I think it's alive and well. It just may manifest itself in different ways.
I see. Rock never dies.
There you go.
Secretary of State confirmed that rock never dies. Well, I know you people are getting nervous. The time's up, so we have to let you go. And thank you so much for your time again, Mr. Secretary.
It's great to talk to you.
And wish the huge success for the summit.
And
you hope you have a great time in Seoul.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
Thank you.